This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Now, on Philadelphia's Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, a closer look.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martireno. I'm your host and guide as we gather and talk about, among many other things, substance abuse, treatment, behavioral health, a wide range of topics. The program is sponsored by Retreat Behavioral Health, and we'll have more about them straight ahead. Today we're going to take a look at something that you may have come across in your reading or seen something on television about it, and that's the use of horses in the treatment of a whole lot of different things from, substance abuse, physical disabilities, emotional issues, and wondered, as I often did, well, gee, look at this. This is a kind of new agey, newfangled kind of technique. I wonder if it works. Well, we're going to be reminded today once again that apparently there is nothing new under the sun, because the use of horses, the utilization of horses as therapeutic aids have been around, well, almost as long as horses have. Certainly the Greeks knew about and believed in the efficacy of horses. No less a famous physician than Hippocrates has written about the therapeutic value. He spoke specifically about riding, but in general, the Greeks were using this a very long time ago. So we're going to try to bring you up to speed on where we are with this fascinating tool, I guess, is what we should call equine treatment. And to that end, we welcome to the program Liz Ochevsky. Liz is a equine specialist. She's certified in that field. She works out of the Delray Beach area in Florida. And as a result of that proximity to West Palm, she works very closely with the people at Retreat. We welcome Liz Ochevsky to the program. Hi, Liz. How are you?
Hi, Steve. Good. Thanks for having me.
I said before we went on the air that if this went well, I would buy Liz a horse. She chose lunch instead. So I am great.
That's how you know a true horseman. We know the value of the expense rather of keeping a horse. But it's interesting you said before, or just as we got started there, about the beneficial elements of the horse. And ironically, the back of our shirts for our children's program have a quote from Winston Churchill that say there is something about the outside of a horse that is good for the inside of man. And about 3 years ago, Washington State University did a study with, I think, 120 children, fifth through eighth grade, no certain, specific population. And they did a mouth swab of the saliva, which measured the cortisol, which is the stress hormone, pre and post 6 weeks of working with horses. And they found that being around horses actually did reduce the cortisol, did reduce the stress in the participant in the participants of the study. So when I speak around the country on this topic, I often say that, that is the first quantifiable research that we have, proof, medical proof, that supporting what Winston Churchill knew years ago, mm-hmm. that horses are good for us. So,
and apparently,
yeah, you're right. They've been used for, probably 30 years in terms of the physical aspect of people with, disabilities. And I would say in the last, 12 to 15 years, more from the psychological aspect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
use them both in an equine therapy fashion, which mm-hmm. is traditional therapy, and then equine facilitated learning, which we can go into that later.
Mm-hmm.
But just to give you a little background on me, I started the program, the nonprofit, almost 10 years ago because my mother had died prematurely from alcoholism, from liver cirrhosis. So when I was 14, she was diagnosed with 6 months to live, but she ended up living another 10 years. But of course, none of us knew that, so my aunt raised me, and another aunt introduced me to horses, and it was pretty much horses and mentors that I believed saved me from following in her footsteps in the path of addiction. So I'm super thankful for that, and I want to pass that forward to some of the kids standing in the place where I stood several
mm-hmm.
years ago.
Mm-hmm. We're going to break this, your relationship with using horses in as a treatment mode, into a couple of categories. I know you work with both adults for a range of issues and children as well for kind of a specific area. But let's back up to your introduction to the therapeutic value of horses. Do you have any idea why was your aunt a horse person, or why did she direct you?
Yeah, not the aunt that raised me, but the other aunt that I spent 2 summers with. She had trained some horses in dressage. She was by trade. She was a concert pianist, and she came across a horse kind of by accident, looking for a mount for her daughter that was a wild Mustang that she rescued, just to give it a better life. And it took her about a year before she could even sit on its back. And then about within 3 years, she had it trained to the level, fourth level in dressage, which is really high up, and competed at dressage at Devon. And it was that horse named Jonathan that really stole my heart. He had, you know, little gray scars on his outside of his body that were a result of going through a barbed wire fence. And I remember thinking of the parallels and saying, you know, your scars are on the outside, mine are on the inside. You've been rescued and done wonderful things, and I would love that same opportunity. So there was just this instant connection, and we find that with our kids and adults even to this day. There's something about the horse. And after about 2 years of working with them, I started learning the physiological reasons and historical reasons why. But I don't know. Do you want me to get into that?
Well,
now,
yeah, or? I do. I do want to get into that, but because it is fascinating, I'm sure what began as a diversion. I mean, you mm-hmm. talk about your family situation with substance abuse and losing your mom to alcoholism, and being wounded by that, and your relatives saying, "Well, let's get her involved in something that begins, I guess, basically as a diversion. Let's take Liz's mind off of this and put it someplace else." And then it slowly dawns on you that there's a much deeper connection. It is interesting about horses. I know that dogs have the reputation for being our best friends, but there is something very deep about the relationship between humans and horses. I mean, dogs, it's easy to understand. They're small. They need help to be fed. It's nice to be sheltered. Horses are pretty big, and they seem pretty independent and scary. We do have this kind of
ironically, it's the complete opposite.
Is it really?
Dogs are predators. Horses are prey. I mean, they're domesticated. Both are domesticated, of course. But as you know, dogs love you no matter what. That's part of what we love about them.
Well, that's what I mean.
Unconditionally,
right.
They love us.
Right.
Horses being prey, their focus throughout the day is always on survival. Their mind is always in the moment, the here and now and present, because if they lose focus and focus on something else, you know, from years ago when the wild cougars, and that would be their natural predator, they would get eaten. So they couldn't afford to, be thinking about something other than their survival in the moment. So
yeah.
A lot of the reasons that we use them, the manifestation of what that brings out in their behavior is what's helpful to us in using them. So they will not connect with someone who isn't congruent and present. And by congruent, I mean, you know, we as people, we can hold two truths. I can be like, Steve, how you doing? It's a great day, you know. But inside, I can be miserable. Horses do not like that when we're different. They want us to be matching inside to out, because how that translates to them is, if you can't be honest with yourself, what are your intentions with me? Are you going to hurt me? Are you going to eat me? So there's a very real hypervigilance and hyper-awareness in their state that kind of only allows certain people in. It serves as a filter, and if you're congruent and you're present and you have good intentions, they'll begin to connect with you. If any of those three things aren't in alignment, they won't hurt you, but they'll walk away. They will not make any attempt to connect.
Yeah, you know, it's remarkable to think that they've survived and flourished as well as they have, given that, as you say, they are prey animals. And I guess, what defenses did they have, you know, across the ages? I guess just their speed and size, right, to protect them?
Yeah, I mean, in the wild, now that we've domesticated them, we've made them completely reliant on us. I mean, their digestive systems are designed to be, out grazing pretty much all day. So it's funny when people say healthy as a horse, I have to laugh, because horses' digestive system, at least now, are as intricate and delicate as you can imagine. I mean, if they're eating grass and there's too much sand and they get some amount of sand in their digestive system, they can colic and die. So I've never figured out where that saying healthy as a horse came from, but they've survived over the years because they've tuned their awareness and their hypervigilance such that they could survive, and they also rely heavily on the herd. The herd is a very social system where everyone has a role, and the horses on the outside of the role or the outside of the herd on the outside circle are looking out for prey, and they know that's their job. And if you watch a herd in nature, you'll notice they don't have their heads down to the grass as much, and the ones on the inside are grazing. But their eyes, all the horses' eyes, of course, are on the side of their head so that they can almost see 180 degrees both sides. And again, that's to see predators. They can't really see real great directly in front or directly in back. But the herd and everyone's roles and how social that is and how that relates to human social characteristics is also very interesting.
Yeah, and we're going to get deeper into this notion of congruence because that's key to getting whatever therapeutic value there is in equine treatment squared away. Just a couple of questions about horses because they're so fascinating. What's the average lifespan of a horse?
I would say maybe early to mid-30s. I mean, there's a horse that I know of that's in its 40s, but I would say early to late 20s, they start losing their competitiveness in terms of being in any sport and go into retirement. And then, you know, they can mid-30s is an average age for a horse to live.
Do horses?
And ironically, the bigger, kind of like dogs, the bigger they are, the less their lifespan. So you'll find that the larger breeds, the Percherons, the Clydesdales, the colder-blooded horses don't live quite as long as the ones, the thoroughbreds, the Arabians, and the miniature horses.
Liz Ozhevsky is our guest. Liz is an equine specialist, and she's talking to us about the use of horses as therapeutic aids. Before we take a quick break, just one other silly question from me about horses. Do they sleep standing up, or do they lie down? What do they do?
They can. I mean, it kind of depends on the horse. They have a locking mechanism in their knees that allows them to lock their knees and sleep standing up.
Me
too. And they say that a lot of horses shouldn't sleep laying down too long because of their organs. But
right.
I know my guy, he sleeps for hours. So I don't know that there's any hard and fast rule. But, yeah, they're known to sleep standing up a great amount of the time.
This is Recovery Radio. We're talking to Liz Ozhevsky about her specialty, which is equine treatment. She is an equine specialist. We have more with Liz straight ahead. Stick around. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Our guest on the telephone from Florida is Liz Ozhevsky. Liz is a certified equine specialist. She does a lot of work in a lot of areas in the Delray Beach area as a result of her residence in Florida. She's worked very closely with Retreat Behavioral Health. We're going to have more about some special stuff they have coming up together in about a week or so. But Liz has been giving us chapter and verse on this fascinating tool that, as we said at the beginning of the program, has been around for a very, very long time. Lots of people have recognized that there is something special and helpful and therapeutic in getting people with all kinds of different disorders and problems in this kind of a program. So Liz, you clearly went to school for this. What's the certification process like?
Sure. So I actually didn't go to school per se for this, but I did. My experience, I guess, started back when I started the nonprofit. I started doing what's called equine facilitated learning, which wasn't in a model in and of itself, but we combine a learning curriculum and prevention, and then the children get an opportunity to ride. And there's a lot of interesting parallels, such as you can bring physics into horses when you talk about the movement of the horse and where the weight is of the rider, and I mean, all kinds of interesting things there. But about 5 years ago, so we've been in existence 9 years, 5 years ago I went to a workshop and they were talking about no margin, no mission, which basically meant that if a nonprofit doesn't do something to kind of make themselves self-sustainable, that the funders don't want to keep supporting them. They need to get kind of an arm that's increasing their sustainability. So since we were in Delray Beach and near the treatment centers and we have the access to the horses, I thought, let's look into equine therapy. So we looked at different models and decided to get certified in the EGALA model. So EGALA stands for Equine Assisted Growth and Learning Association, and they're kind of the gold seal. They're in over 50 countries. They have certified professionals and over, I think it's getting close to 6,000 members. And they have a co-facilitated model, which requires a mental health professional and an equine specialist to be on site with the horses as part of the clinical team the whole time. So whether you have one client you're working with or 12 in a group, you still have two facilitators with the horses. So I'm the equine specialist, and then I partner with the mental health specialist. So as the names dictate, we're each looking out for different things.
Right.
The other facilitator's looking out for the mental health and emotional health of the clients or patients, whereas I'm making sure that everyone's physically safe. Is the client or patient in a position where they could get hurt easily? You know, these are large animals. They move quickly, and there's a lot you can read about their body language that can indicate what might happen next. And of course, I have a little bit more experience seeing that, so it's my responsibility to make sure that all the clients and patients stay safe.
So are you a horse whisperer?
I'm sorry.
Are you a horse whisperer?
That's an interesting phrase. And you know, I still have not seen that movie. I need to do that. Yeah, I don't know exactly how you would phrase that, but it's interesting because I see a lot of patients who come in, and horses are very right-brained, and I tend to be very left-brained. So by the right side of our brain is more artistic, more open, more freeing, less structure, mm-hmm. and the left brain is obviously the opposite of that. So sometimes patients can come in, and I can tell when they walk with a horse and they say they've never been around a horse before, but it just flows supernatural, and I can tell the horse is very comfortable. A lot of times, just out of the blue, I'll say, "Are you artistic?" And they'll say, "Yeah, how did you know?" So I guess if I'm a horse whisperer, I can recognize the left brain and right brain tendencies, but unfortunately, I'm more left brain.
What is the reaction of most people in treatment when it's suggested that maybe they can benefit from being around horses? Are people immediately receptive to that, or do they go, really?
Yeah, I would say over 90% are very excited to be there. Once they step on the property, they kind of feel the relaxation and the you know, nature and environment just kind of calms them down. You do have a few clients who I feel are very skeptical, and they're like, "Oh, how's, you know, petting a horse going to help me? I don't get it." And the model is also very metaphorical, so it goes along the idea that the clients kind of have their own idea, their own best solutions inside of them, but we have to provide the opportunity for these patterns of behavior to come up. And what happens is when they watch the horses behave in the pattern in their herd, many times they'll recognize a pattern in their own life, and I think it's easier to see it because they're not so defensive. They're seeing it happen outside of themselves. So a lot of times they'll see two horses kind of going at it. The horses are maybe rearing up a little or nipping at each other, and half the group will say, "Oh, they're fighting." The other half will say, "Oh, they're playing." And then somebody will say, "Well, you know, I'll ask, you know, could one of those horses hurt the other if he or she really wanted to?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, why don't you think they do?" "Well, they're just playing." "Well, if it gets old, why doesn't one horse just walk away?" You know, and they think and they go, "Well, when I'm arguing with my husband, I don't walk away because I'm right." You know, so they start recognizing and seeing those patterns, which is rewarding.
Liz, we're going to take another break here quickly, but to, just describe briefly, if you can, what's the physical situation? You know, where does this coming together with the client and the horses occur? Is it a ring, or is it a field?
It's an arena that is covered, which is nice. Being in South Florida, we are in shade the whole time, and it's a very large arena. I think it's 200 feet long. I mean, it's huge. And there's, ironically, there's a mirror at the end. So that serves to play in some of the groups as well. But yeah, it's a very, natural environment. There's a gazebo where we join and talk about safety. But the whole experience, I find for the clients is just super relaxing, and they love getting out of the center and trying something different.
Liz Ochevsky is our guest. She's an equine specialist, and we're learning all about horses and their therapeutic use. When we come back, we're gonna pick up the topic with the special attention towards the difference between using the horses in an adult context and then with children, because Liz, I think that's very near and dear to her heart. Straight ahead on Recovery Radio. Don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano with you. We'll be back with our guest in just a second. First, I do want to remind you that, you know, the rent around here, the freight, is paid by Retreat Behavioral Health. They check them out if you like. I mean, their reputation speaks for itself. They are a world-class behavioral health facility. They treat a wide range of both substance abuse issues and also behavioral health issues. But they're sponsoring the program as an informational tool. Any questions or comments you have about anything you hear on this program or anything in the areas of behavioral health and substance abuse, and you just want somebody to answer some questions for you, believe me, they are there to do that for you. If they can help you, they can. They've helped many. But that's not what this is about. This is an educational and informational effort. I give you their phone number, and I tell you this every week. I really hope you never have to use it. 855-859-8808. That's how you reach them. Retreat Behavioral Health, 855-859-8808. Liz Ochevsky is our guest, and Liz works with people and horses. And she is an equine specialist. She is filling us in on a kind of sort of new and emerging past 20 years or so use of horses as therapeutic tools. But as we said at the beginning of the program, this has been around since at least the Greeks identified this benefit that could derive from working with horses. But it is relatively a new phenomenon, particularly in the areas of substance abuse. Liz, I know we want to talk about what you do specifically in two areas, with adults and then with children. So let's begin with the adults. Tell us about that program.
Sure. So as I mentioned before, we started about 5 years ago and got certified in the EGALA method or the model. And we've had the privilege of working with over 5,000 clients or patients in that time frame. And I think Retreat's been on with us for 2 years. And I will have to say, not to give them a little plug, but their clients are consistently very motivated and very into their recovery, which is refreshing for us, because it just, the hour and a half, some sessions are an hour for some treatment centers, they go 90 minutes, and it just makes the time fly by. But I wanted to share, there was one story of a gal who, many times we say that this is latent learning. So you go through this experience, and we encourage the clients and patients when they leave to journal about it. Their mind, they may think about it 3 days later, and something comes back, and they go, that's why the horse did that, you know. So this particular gal, what was happening in the arena is she was walking her horse, and then there was another horse behind her, and that horse was at liberty, meaning free, didn't have a halter or anything on it. And she would walk, and then the other horse would follow a few steps, and then she would walk, and she noticed where it switched to where she would stop and look back at that horse, and then walk a few more steps and stop and look back. And it was just this pattern, and while she was there, nothing really in particular came up, but we got a letter 2 weeks later from her, and she said, it hit me in the middle of the night. That other horse is my husband, and that's what I do. I do a few things in life. I go through some activities, and then I stop and look back and get approval or wait for approval or get his input on it, and then I go again. And it was just neat to see that, you know, sometimes the light bulb goes off in the arena just like that, and sometimes it hits a little later. But when the clients or the patients come to the realization themselves, it's so much more impactful meaningful. I think they really can go with it.
Let me ask you, what realization did she come to? I mean, she uses the metaphor of this is my husband. What Can you explain to me what realization she just...
Well, she noticed the pattern. I mean, I think in the end of it, it was possibly a codependency thing, mm-hmm. that she needed to be more independent and not so reliant on his opinion or even checking in with him and just be her own person. But this is what happens is you'll see these activities. I mean, one of the most obvious things that happens sometimes is one of the horses we use periodically does this activity called cribbing. It's ironically, horses start it out of boredom, but what they actually do is they put their teeth on the top of either a fence post or something solid, and they suck in air, and it releases endorphins in their brain. And they start it out of boredom, but then as the serotonin and all the different brain chemicals get released, then they start getting addicted to that feeling. And then they start doing it more and more and more. And in the process, they actually ruin their teeth. They ruin their respiratory systems. I mean, their body starts, the quality of their hair goes down. I mean, a ton of ancillary side effect things that happen as a result of this. And to watch a horse do it, it's not a pretty thing. I mean, they arch their back, and it's just not pretty. But when that horse does that, and a patient is watching, and they'll say, "What are they doing?" And I describe that process, and invariably they always say, "Just like drugs."
Right.
I started out
mm-hmm.
out of boredom, mm-hmm. and then I got addicted, and then regardless of all the mental or the health problems that I'm having, and the family I'm losing, and the job I'm losing, I just keep doing it. So it's interesting to see that there's such direct parallels that happen.
Yeah. Something fascinating about being able people who seem to be more get deeper insights when they're relating to mm-hmm. animals as opposed to when they're trying to relate to other human beings. It just seems that there's mm-hmm. a quicker and deeper appreciation of what's going on here. Now, what sort of horses do you need? Are these horses specifically trained in therapies?
Well, the way that the horse is most valuable to us in that model is to just be a horse. So we certainly don't train them to do anything, but not all horses would be good therapy horses. Reason being, some of them may nip or bite more than others, and we of course don't want to bring that into play if we can avoid it. And then others are a little bit more difficult to. They're just like, they all have personalities just like people. So some of them are a little bit more difficult to connect with than others. And you don't want to bring, again, something that's a challenge into something where you want a connection. So there are different things we look at with the horses in terms of their socialism and their physical habits that make them a good candidate. But there's mm-hmm. no training per se. It's just allowing them to be a horse.
Take us through the kind of beginning stages when your clients, these adult clients, are first introduced to the ring and the horse. These are on leads. You're not teaching them to ride immediately. This is not about that.
Yeah, no, everything's on the ground in the Agala model, and that's intentional because, you know, when you're on the ground, you're on an even playing field with the horses. But first we talk to them about some safety things, and then we allow them to watch from outside the arena some of the herd behavior, and then we bring them in, and the first activity we do is called Meet the Herd, and we don't allow any talking or any touching with the horses or them, you know, amongst each other. And it's just to kind of get settled in themselves, get in touch with their body, and notice the patterns in the herd. And a lot of times a horse will walk up to one of them and almost, you know, nudge them, and it's really difficult for them not to touch the horse. So that brings up some stuff for people. And then the next stage is we allow them to go meet the horses, but we actually say, look for cues, physical cues that you're being invited. Because so many times just in life, whether we're in addiction or not, we're not receiving and listening to feedback. We're just talking and giving and not really listening. So to walk up to a horse and start petting it and would be very similar to me walking up to you within 4 inches of your face and start petting you. It's like, okay, back up. You know, this is a little mm-hmm. intrusive. So they learn how to watch the body language in that next section. And then we do various exercises with them. But at the end, regardless of what the exercise is, at the end they're able to walk a horse on a lead. And share with that horse something. It can be positive. It can be something they're struggling with. The horses have an incredible ability to kind of take stuff that we need to let off our shoulders and just dispose of it, if you will. So, and we say, you don't even have to say this out loud. You can walk with the horse quietly. You can talk. You can do whatever you want. But that, to me, is the most rewarding part of it. And sometimes even before they start walking, they start having issues that they can't get the horse to walk. And that is another huge metaphor for, you know, we wait for them to ask us for help because they will try and try and try. And there's another parallel, like how many times have you tried sobriety without asking for help? Mm-hmm. And so finally they'll ask and I'll say, okay, I'm going to give you some information here that the horse knows you don't know how to walk it. And he's lazy, so why should he? So you do this, you do that, and I walk them through the steps, and then invariably they get the horse to walk, and they always want to look back at the horse, and again, that's a very natural human thing to do, but I say, no, look where you're going. And then at the end, we bring that metaphor to sometimes in sobriety or in recovery, we've all kind of got a past behind us, and if we keep looking back at the past, we're not going to go to the future. Now, we have to be aware of the past, and the past, you know, the horse is this huge 1,200-pound animal that can step on the back of their heels, can run them over, can do a lot of different things. But as the horse begins to walk up next to them and they walk, now they're walking with their past. Now they're walking with the horse because we can't ever completely forget our past.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to allow it to help us and bring the positive parts of it, you know, and not stay so focused on it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of neat metaphors that happen. But I tell them in the beginning, you know, now that you have the knowledge, you can walk the horse. Just like before you came to, you know, treatment center, you didn't have the tools of recovery. You didn't know the 12 steps. You didn't. Now you know them. So apply them and look how easy it is, you know.
You mentioned earlier that in this process is a team affair. You are the equine specialist. Your primary responsibility is the horse and its relationship to the client. But all of this is going on under the watchful eye and I guess not supervision, but certainly the attention of a therapist, either a psychologist.
Yeah, he's a mental health professional that is specialized in the EGALA model as well. So, yeah, she's in the arena at all times. And there'll be times where we separate and go and do things, but 90% of the time we're standing next to one another and observing and asking questions and things like that.
When we come back with Liz, we're going to talk about the techniques she just talked about and apply them to children and talk about Liz's organization she created, Horses Healing Hearts. We'll learn more about that as well as an event that if you're in the Florida, the Delray Beach area, that's coming up on May 7th, you may want to drop in. This is Recovery Radio. We'll be back. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I want to thank our guest, Liz Ocheski, who's been with us talking about her specialty, which is she's an equine specialist. She works very closely with Retreat in the use of these animals to help people with a wide range of issues. Now, Liz, I know there's an event going on that you're going to be a part of with a Retreat on the 7th of May, coming up next week. Tell us about that.
Yes. We're super excited about that. Retreat approached us a few months ago and wanted to basically have a day for us to help fundraise and raise awareness in the community about equine therapy and Horses Healing Hearts. So it's May 7th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., and it's in Delray. I know if you get on Retreat's Facebook, they have an event page on it, but it's called Supporting the Children Left Behind. And during this day, we're going to have all kinds of great things. We'll have different stations where people can experience equine therapy for a few minutes, and then we'll rotate and they'll learn about a little bit about the children's program, the prevention, Horses Healing Hearts that's been going for 9 years, and it's going to be a fantastic day. I think they have shirts for sale. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like great. So if you're in the Delray Beach area, May 7th, equine therapy supporting the children left behind. Liz, tell us about the children left behind. Who are we talking about?
Yeah, so this population is, and as you know, in the last 3 to 5 years, it's become a much larger population due to the crisis that we're facing. But children of alcoholics and addicts are a very special group of children that they're very resilient, but they've lived through a lot of trauma and have a lot of what we call toxic stress and ACE scores. I don't know if we have time to get into that, but that's certainly, if you want to Google that, something that's very relevant. But we help children who have grown up with one or more parents who are either actively using or early in recovery. And currently, I think we have about 42 kids in the program. We've had as many as 50 at one point, but we've been doing this for going on September. This year will be 10 years. And we've helped over 600 families during that time. So what a typical session looks like is they come for 2 hours on a Saturday, and they're broken into age groups, so it's age-specific. And the first 40 minutes is, part of it is them just sharing their highs and lows for the week, and you can hear everything from, you know, I got an A on a test, to my dad is on life support because he overdosed. And then they go into a prevention curriculum from SAMHSA, and we're just now starting one from BOTS and Life Skills, which is evidence-based. And to back up a minute, one really truly heart-wrenching story that you hear, but, and again, there's hope with this too, because the children are learning life skills. But one little girl, 10 years old, said this a few months ago. She had found her mom overdosed, not passed away, not deceased, but very close to it. And it happened twice inside of 13 months. And she, at this particular time, her mom had 90 days sober, and she was super proud of her. And she said, "My high is I watched my mom get her 90-day chip last night." And she said, "The good news is that I'm getting a lot of sleep, and my grades are getting better because, you know, at night I don't have to get up and check her breathing all through the night." So when you tell someone that's not familiar with addiction or recovery, it kind of takes them back, and they don't realize the magnitude and the heaviness of the issues that these kids deal with day in and day out. But they are. They're raising their siblings. The addiction, the person with the addiction, their addiction takes focus every day, and a lot of times the children aren't heard and aren't cared for. So we provide a place for 2 hours where they can be a kid. They can feel safe and drop the shame. They can learn that they're not alone and their parents' addiction is not their fault. And then they also get an opportunity to ride. Each child gets about 20 minutes of ride time. And it's just an incredible opportunity to see these kids really open up. And we know that for many of them, this is their only safe place where they can be themselves. So it's an incredibly rewarding and humbling program and experience, but we're super proud of it. And there's a team of volunteers and board members and advisory board members and volunteers that all come together every week to make it happen. So it's really good stuff.
Liz, people are able to listen to this all over the place. Can you give us some? Well, first of all, you should give us the website of your organization.
Yeah, it's www.hhhusa.org. And then we also have a phone number that is 877-HORSE-10. So that may be a little easier to remember.
Folks who, do you work with Alateen and support groups like that to get
it's
this?
It's very similar. When I describe our two-hour groups to people, I say think of Pony Club, Alateen, and Breakfast Club all thrown together in 2 hours on a Saturday. So we don't do Alateen per se, but we have Alateen, you know, notices up of where meetings are. So we're all about education, and we work through a lot with the principles of NACOA, National Association for Children of Alcoholics, that's been around 35 years. And they were actually the group that invited me to speak to Washington in 2016 to the Bipartisan Congressional Committee. So they're a very, very great source of information and education for these kids so that we keep them on track with. The main thing we're trying to build is self-efficacy. You know, a lot of people say self-esteem or confidence, but self-efficacy is their ability to use the tools that they learn to help themselves. Mm-hmm. Because truly, we don't know what's going to happen to their parent. You know, they may never get sober, or they may get sober and relapse in 3 weeks. So we've got to give the tools to the child and encourage them and validate their feelings. So the overall goal is that we stop this generational cycle of addiction. That's really, on a big picture, what we're trying to do.
Liz Ochevsky, thanks so very much. Again, if you're in the Delray Beach area, May 7th, Equine Therapy, supporting the children left behind. Liz, this has been the real eye-opener, and thanks so much for your work and your time. We appreciate it. Take care.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. Everybody, take care as well. We'll see you next time on Recovery Radio.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.